Welcome to The Next Step. The next step is figuratively, but also literally in this case, what happens after the first time. It's about figuring out what to do next in life, specifically how to manage the push-pull between ambition and contentment. Like, what do you have to do to achieve the things you want, and how can you be happy if you achieve nothing? Sometimes I wonder, would I be better off spending my time setting goals and making lists or meditating? Perhaps I should do a vision board. How do people make money and grow successful multi-million dollar businesses? Like, what are the actual steps? And are ice baths the answer to everything? I'm Catherine Collette, and this is The Next Step. This podcast was recorded and produced on the unceded lands of the Wurundjeri and Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures. This episode of The Next Step is with Nat Kringoudis. It is the episode where I finally get to talk about ice baths and fasting and health stuff. Nat Kringoudis is a healthcare practitioner. She's also a 2-times best-selling author, speaker, and all-round natural fertility expert. She's the founder of Melbourne Women's Health Clinic, the Pagoda Tree, and host of the Wellness Collective podcast. We talk about this a little bit in the episode, but she's just one of those people that is consistently ahead of the curve. She does a lot of self-experimentation when it comes to health-related things. She's got a huge following on social media. If you're an Instagram person, definitely go follow her. You will find links to do this in the show notes. Welcome, Nat Kringoudis, to The Next Step.
Thank you so much for having me, and well done on the pronunciation of my surname.
I will not do it again, just
don't say it at the end.
Nat, I have followed you for a really long time, so this is super exciting for me. Oh. I've got a heap of questions for you, but I want to start with kind of an activity. Okay. Basically, I'm going to mention a few things that are healthy or that I've been told are healthy. And can you tell me in one word if you think they're good, bad, or cozy? You can pass if you have
Okay,
no.
Great. Okay. Go.
The first is fasting.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Good.
Depends on the type of fasting, but yes, generally.
Contraceptive pill.
No way.
Ice baths.
Depends on the person. Yes and no. It's not cozy doesn't cover it. It's sometimes yes, sometimes no.
Okay, we're going to come back to that one. Saunas.
Same thing. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Depends on the constitution of the person. That's not a yes or no answer.
Okay, that's a fence sit. Infrared sauna blankets.
Same.
Okay. All right. Sensing a theme. Red light face masks.
I love red light therapy. The face mask. I don't say why not. Good.
Okay, that's good. This is a favourite of many people, drinking lemon with hot or warm water in the morning.
Well, the dentists are going to say no. I think there's worse things you can do. I'm going to say yes.
Okay, blue light blocking glasses.
Oh, yeah, that's good. It's good. Do you think I do it? No, but good.
But good, okay. The orange flavoured vitamin C tablets you get at the supermarket.
No.
I could tell my husband that. He keeps buying them. Expensive vitamins.
If they're the right ones for you.
Okay. All right.
Self-prescribing might not be the best. There might be an expensive exercise to self-prescribe.
Okay. All right. So of all those, I am glad that fasting was the firmest yes, because that is a key thing I want to talk about. And that's where we're going to start. Firstly, has your thinking about fasting changed across your career?
Yeah, it really has changed, and it's gone through a few iterations. And I mean, I started fasting in my late 30s. And it was transformational, like just absolutely loved it. And that was more of an intermittent fasting. Then, like the rest of the world, got COVID, ended up with long COVID, couldn't seem to like get the long COVID under control. It was just like, you know, I could fix everybody else, but I couldn't fix myself, which is standard for practitioners, let's be honest. And then I stopped fasting and I got better. So that was an interesting observation. But in more recent times, I've really adopted a more of a approach to a prolonged fast, and a fast definitely in accordance more with the cycle, with the menstrual cycle. So knowing some days are great to fast, knowing the times where I really think a prolonged fast can offer amazing benefits. like incredible benefits. And then there's times that we are called to fast and times that we just shouldn't. So that, again, means it's not a one-size-fits-all approach anymore, as once upon a time I was like, everyone should. But I do believe that everybody can and should at some point each year do a prolonged fast for at least 48 to 72 hours.
Interesting. I was going to ask how long, what the definition of prolonged fast was. In a practical sense, what does fasting look like?
Well, in a practical sense, you're really not having anything much at all. We're talking about a water fast. You can have black tea, black coffee, herbal teas, water, salt. And that doesn't mean Lucozade. I've had people have messaged me and say, I felt like I fainted and I vomited. And I'm like, what were you having? And they're like, Lucozade. And I'm like, no, that's A, it's awful to begin with, but B, your blood sugar would have been going crazy. And to the point of that too, I think it's not as hard as you think it is when you shut your digestive system down. And a lot of people will say, oh, I just couldn't never do that. Until you try it and you're like, I can totally do this. Look, I'm not going to lie, it's boring. You have to schedule it at the right time. It's really boring. But scheduling it at the right time, especially the right time of the cycle for a female, can just have the most incredible results that we see with patients. So, yeah, you're really not having a whole lot. But unlike a cleanse, let's say, people love a juice cleanse, I find a prolonged fast 100 times easier than a juice cleanse. Because a juice cleanse, you're getting your blood sugar's going up and down. You're looking for the next juice or soup or whatever you're having, constantly thinking about it. Prolonged fast, it doesn't really do the same thing to your brain. So, of course, I should also say that there are people that shouldn't do it. Pregnant women, breastfeeding women need to be very mindful. So it's not a no, but you would do that. I think it should be under the advice of a practitioner. And of course, people who have a history of an eating disorder, that would also not be advised. So like anything, you know, I don't love that we have to put disclaimers on things, but, you know, someone might be hearing this for the first time that's pregnant and think it's a good idea and it's not. So yeah, it's like everything. We really have to figure it out. But I do think it is an achievement. Ultimately, what you're achieving with a prolonged fast is you're maxing autophagy in the body. And when your body is in a state of autophagy, and that is that the cells are cleaning themselves out, so right down to a cellular level, you are giving the body like a deep clean. Mm. And we know that this has shown to reduce incidence of cancer, shrink tumors. I have seen patients who have had fertility issues for years and at their absolute wit's end said to me, Nat, can I do a fast? And I've said, you know what, you've got nothing to lose at this point in time. Let's go. And they've been pregnant a couple months later. Just incredible, like incredible. And the reason that I started doing it, I did my first prolonged fast was, again, my symptoms I was left with still 2-3 years out after having COVID were awful. And one day I was desperate. That's why I did it.
That's so interesting. Fasting has had, like, really feels like it's having a day in the sun. I think the messaging around women is the thing that has really lagged in that promotion of fasting and the benefits of fasting. It's 100%. Interesting hearing you say, talk about time of a cycle. What is the best time in a woman's cycle to fast?
So the worst time, let's go with the worst time. It's a bit easier. So the worst time to fast would be pre-hormone events, so like ovulation period time. So fasting pre-ovulation, it will potentially delay ovulation. Now, as a once-off, I don't think that really matters. But if you loved it and you decided you were going to do a prolonged fast once a month, which is actually nothing wrong with if you know what you're doing, you just wouldn't time it in the pre-ovulation window every month. That wouldn't be good because it would delay your ovulation, so lengthen your cycle. And most women would freak out. If you didn't know why your period's late, we freak out. Even if we haven't been intimate, we still freak out. Second phase of the cycle in the later stages of the luteal phase, so anywhere from around day 21, this is presuming a woman has a regular menstrual cycle, it's not ideal. You need that nourishment to support your hormones over that later stages of the cycle. What would happen if you fasted at that time is your period would probably come early. Now, again, as a once-off, it doesn't matter if your period's late or early, but if you chose to do it that day every month, that could be problematic. You don't want to be doing that, a bit messy with your hormones, especially as you get older. So they're the worst times. You can pretty much fast from your period. So the first day of your period, if you feel okay, is a good time. Right up until probably around cycle day, I'd say for most people, 9 or 10. And then once you've ovulated, you've got about another window of roughly a week, just slightly shy of a week. So when you look at that, it's really 2 and a bit weeks that are an optimal time to do a prolonged fast. And then there's sort of almost a week-ish, week and a bit, that you probably wouldn't do that on a regular basis. And again, based around what your hormones are doing, that might change, and based around how you're feeling, not everybody feels the same. Like period day one for me, I'm ready to go. I'm like, feel good, energy's on track. It's the day I can like lift heavy at the gym and do all the things. But the two days before, forget about it, like just not happening. So I kind of know that about myself, and I would avoid those phase, that time. Not everyone feels great day one of their period. A lot of women, their hormone changes are slow and they might take 3 or 4 days to feel like themselves. So, you know, it's about listening to your body as well.
I like that. Good message. Now and then, Nat, you run a 24-hour supported fast. I've done this. I heard about it via Instagram. I have also done a 3-day fast separately. The one that you led was way better.
Oh, thanks.
Like so much better. And I completely agree about the idea of boredom being the most difficult part. I will link to your Instagram in the show notes. But as an aside, when is your next 48-hour?
So I think the best time for us to support people, because collectively supporting people on a cleanse is a bit of a time. So I always say end of, we normally do one at the end of summer and the start of spring.
Okay.
But the next one will be in September. And I just love guiding people through it because it's a choose your own adventure scenario. We say we don't care how long you fast for. We're going to support you for 48 hours, whether you choose to do 12 hours, 24, 48. People message and say, can I do 72? Can I keep going? We're like, yeah, knock yourself out. I think the boredom part is a real thing. And I think it's also a time where you really have to distract yourself. So I actually say the best time to fast is also during a work week when you're not sitting at home on the couch, or that you might have when you're preoccupied and busy. I also say to schedule in things that you love. Now that might be going for a walk with a girlfriend, that she might be doing it with you and you can go together at 5 o'clock at night or 6 o'clock at night when the family or you would ordinarily be eating, distract yourself. I like to schedule in, you know, a massage or a facial or some things to look forward to throughout the 2 days because it is boring. I make sure I go to bed early. You would never understand how delicious salt in water tastes until you've done a fast. And if you didn't do that last time, the first time we never suggested to do that. In fact, the second iteration of our group fast was great because we learned from the first one. And I sent everyone a message at about, I don't even know what part of the, it was like the last, let's say it's the last 12 hours. And I'm like, you're going to thank me for this. Go boil the kettle, put a little bit of salt in the water as much as you'd like and sip it. And everyone was like, oh, it's delicious.
Hilarious.
So hilarious. But the salt is actually really good for you at that point in time, just for the hydration. And the other thing I didn't touch on that's really important is you absolutely have to stay really well hydrated to not feel yucky. We're emailing throughout the fast. We're emailing every time there's a achievement. So, you know, what happens in the first 4 hours, what happens in the next 2 hours. And so because you're constantly being updated on what your body is doing during our fasting challenge. I don't even like to call it the challenge.
I did wonder if we did.
You're right. But I kept saying it fasting experience just because I just felt like it was a bit nicer. But anyway, but you're right. We did call it that. What was I saying now? I've lost my train of thought. Oh, yeah. We're just keeping people in the loop. And it's amazing when you can actually, you can't see what your body's doing on the inside. But it's amazing to just know what's happening. It's really motivating. I think it keeps you going. You're like, I'm not stopping now if that's what's happening next, you know? So I feel like that for me when I did it was really nice to see what was happening each milestone of the way. And then the other one that I loved, we were getting people messaging us saying, how do I know it's worked? And that one made me laugh because it's like, it's just time doing it. It's of course it's worked. Like that's what happens if you don't eat anything for 36 hours or 42 hours. That's what your body does. There's no like, ta-da. It's just it's done. Like you've spent the time doing it. Now it's done. You can be proud of yourself. And there is a real sense of achievement. And it's also very interesting. People just describe how well they feel during the process, which if you set yourself up properly, you will feel really good. So there's a few things that we get people to do in the lead up as well, just in preparation. I think we added that this time just so, you know, you're in the best possible position because, yeah, it's a bit of a commitment.
I should also say that challenge, and I'm doing the
– That's fine.
Is free.
Yes, it's free.
But I will link for listeners. It's interesting how kind of all paths seem to lead to the same point. I interviewed an author recently on stoicism, and Stoics are also like very big on fasting. They see it more as a way of embracing discomfort and that it has this kind of mental discipline. Do you see fasting as having a mental benefit as well?
Oh my gosh, yes. That was the one thing that, well, I'll tell you something actually, there's one of two ways that it goes. You either feel amazing or you don't. And I think if you don't, that's still a sign that it's not the wrong thing to do, but your body is communicating to you that there's other things at play that you might need to look into. I think one of the most common things we see is issues with people's blood sugar, as I mentioned, and that can feel pretty awful. That's where you get the shakes and the headaches and the but also if someone's completely addicted to sugar, then that's they're going to struggle because you're withdrawing. So, you know, I think you're right. There is absolutely a massive component to it. We know our gut is our second brain and it's doing everything else other than digesting. We make the majority of our serotonin and dopamine in our gut. So, you know, to think about the fact that it gets to do all these other things that it might be clouded when we are constantly topping ourselves up with food. And also, why are we always topping ourselves up with food? I mean, don't get me wrong, I love food. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, we've fasted throughout all of time for religious reasons, for health reasons, for sickness. Like there's been cultures have done it forever. So I don't think, to your point, I think that's part of the reason why we've done that. You know, we fast. My husband's Greek. They fast during Lent. I mean, a lot of Christian denominations do that. But I think that we've done it for a long time. We've disconnected from it. It has amazing benefits for the body. And I really think there's a lot to be said about ancient wisdom.
That's a great point. I want to come back to ice baths. Ice baths got a maybe. Can you elaborate on the maybe?
Yeah. Well, I mean, so I posted about a little while ago, I posted about taking a hot shower and the benefits of a hot shower, and like people went mad for it. And then I was like, oh, we're onto something.
In a positive way.
But then we hit a nerve because people were asking, what about cold showers? I was like, whoa, good question. So I think it depends on your constitution. My background and training is Chinese medicine, and we always look at someone and their constitution. Are they hot or are they a cold constitution? Now, how do you know? Well, the hot constitution is the flush face and they're fairly quick to anger. They're hot generally running as well. You know this person. We all do. But it doesn't mean just because they're quick to anger they're not a bad person. It's just that is just their nature. And then you know the other person that is always cold, sitting on top of the heater. You know, they're often, they might be a little bit, I don't know, you can see the difference. I can see the difference anyway. The person who is the hot constitution does very well with ice baths. They respond very well to that. The person that is the cold constitution, and I can tell you this because this is me, does not. And ice baths, so I was like, I'm going to try this on. I just want to test this. It's very not Chinese medicine. So this is why I resisted for a really long time because it's ingrained in my brain. But I embraced it because I was like, I want to see what the fuss is about. Now, I wasn't quite at the point of an ice bath, but in winter I was going down to the bay and I was getting in the water several times a week. In fact, I was like, if I don't exercise, that was what I was doing instead. So I was alternating almost. And it was interesting, you know, the people that speak of the high and the endorphins and you get out and you feel amazing. And I was just waiting for that to happen every single time. It was interesting. It would take, you know, maybe an hour for my heart rate to come down. My body would swell because when I got out, like, and I'm not staying in there for a long time either, by the way, like I would count, you know, maybe 5 minutes at best, or maybe slightly longer, but yeah, not enough to warrant how I felt when I got out. I felt awful every time. And I was like, when do I get this? Everyone talks about the adrenaline and then the endorphins. And I'm like, when do I get that bit? Like it just never happened. And then, you know, I started to think about that and I kind of went down that rabbit hole just to confirm what I thought. And yeah, I mean, I think it's very much about the constitution. So to the point of the ice bath or the infrared sauna, you know, I am more suited to the sauna than I am to the ice bath. That's not to say it's not a good thing to do, but it might not suit you. And you're only going to know if you really try it on. And I tried it on for maybe 6 weeks. I really tried to, you know, maybe it's a block I've got to get past. Maybe I'll get better. And maybe I might. I don't know. And also you change. Your constitution can change over time too. So who knows? I might end up a menopausal woman. You'll find me in the bay every day. I think there's undoubtedly there's benefits for both, and you need to figure out what works best for you. The idea of sitting in a sauna to me is very appealing, and I get the endorphins and I get the comfort of it. I love that. I love feeling hot. So, yeah, I think it's a person by person scenario.
It's interesting you've spoken about fasting and then you've spoken about ice baths. It sounds like self-experimentation is part of kind of your practice, that you test things out on yourself and then see how they work. I just wonder what that process looks like. Do you physically record how things make you feel or track things?
Yeah, I mean, I also do spend a lot of time on Instagram and I tell people what I'm doing for myself. Mm. And then what tends to happen is people want in. So the fast happened that way. They were like, oh, this is really interesting. I mean, of course, I also got a lot of your nuts and what the hell, why would you do this? And this is dangerous and all the things. I was like, yeah.
People really panic about fasting.
They really feel like stressed about it. But watching somebody do it and then going, oh, wow, okay, you know, that actually seems it something I could do. I will never get people to do something I haven't done. I would never guide them through it. And I certainly wouldn't guide people through something I'd only done once either. So because I share a lot just of experiments that I'm, you know, living out, I get the feedback of what people want. And then it's like, well, why wouldn't I help guide people through that if it's something that I've learned or it's something I've adopted? So, and I'm very open. I really don't think we can ever say that's bad, that's good. Like I feel like there's a place for many things for us, and each to their own as well. You know, I really feel that that's important that we try something and see if it works. But, yeah, I mean, I did definitely try and make the cold plunging a thing, and it's just not a thing. Like it was literally like, it makes me feel so uncomfortable to think about it still now. It's like a real discomfort. And then I get sitting with discomfort. That's why I was like, oh, you've got to do hard things, Nat. So come on, we're going to keep going. So mentally I'm a very able and strong person, but when your body's telling you something else and it was taking me an hour to recover, I was like, this can't be right. When everyone else is telling me how amazing they feel afterwards, and obviously not everyone, but yeah, once I shared that too, a lot of people were saying, that's me. I am so relieved to hear I don't necessarily, ice baths aren't for me, which makes sense, you know.
It does. It seems very obvious when you point it out, but things are not presented in the way of this may make sense for you. Things are presented in the way, you know, this is brilliant.
Right. Well, because I think we think about something like that, anything that's therapeutic, as being a one-size-fits-all, because, again, we've been sold that you take a pill for any problem and it will fix it, and everyone takes the same pill for the same problem, whereas Chinese medicine is very much, okay, let's have a look at how that presents for somebody. According to the presentation, we then work out how to treat that. So, you know, if someone's hot or cold, that will be the first thing that determines the next step in the treatment, in the diagnosis and the treatment process. That's a foundational question. So, you know, then I start to think about everything like that. I start to think about food like that. I start to think about sleep like that. I start to think and experiment with, yeah, all of it for me personally, so that I can also give relevant information to my patients, my audience, my family. People are watching all the time. So that's the other thing. I do really think it's important that we are very aware, at least for me, that I have a lot of people watching, so I don't want to present something that is harmful. I think it's a real privilege to help people at that capacity, but I'm very mindful about how I go about doing that.
I want to talk about your audience, actually, and how you've managed to grow an audience. Maybe we'll start with social media. You have a pretty big social media following, particularly on Instagram. You've been doing this for a very long time. What is your approach to social media?
I mean, I do love social media. And I know not everyone does, and that's fine. I love the community that we've curated and the fact that it's a place where I would say I am extremely authentic. What you see is what you get. If I'm going through some type of drama, I won't hide things necessarily. Mm. You know,
Not about a perfect feed, is it?
It's definitely not a perfect feed. And, you know, there's often things that happen when you are, I hate to say that I think against the grain, but I definitely would say I think with always asking the question, but why? And I've been like this since a very young age. I remember my parents used to say to me, why can't you just do what everyone else is doing? Why do you always have to ask again? Like, why? Why do you always have to see it differently? And it took me a really long time to realize that's actually just how I am. And not doing that would be inauthentic. So not doing that would be showing up as a version of me that's not authentic. So, you know, it's been a long time, I think, I've loved every minute of that, curating that and create. It's a community I see it as a real privilege to be able to support people and have a bigger impact in the world, help more people from one little thing that we do. I think that that's so cool to be able to do that. So ultimately, you know, I know you've got to have a thick skin on social media, even that nowadays, and I probably say this and it'll probably be different tomorrow, but I care less about what people actually think. So I don't really care if someone says you're this, that, or the other. Doesn't matter anymore to me.
Is the key word there anymore? Is that something that you've
had? Yeah, definitely. Like, definitely. There was definitely times where I would be very triggered. I think, I think things have changed in that space. I think we're less likely to have, you know, I mean, people are still can be awful. I read some of the, I love comments. I go in and read people's comments. I live for comments, not on my posts, on other people's posts. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm just here for the comments. Like so often people are awful, but also hilarious, not at the same time. But I just think that that once upon a time I would have been totally, and I teach people this now. I one thing I do that a lot of people don't know is I business mentor, and I teach people this, you know, if you want to make a bigger impact, you are going to need to A, be authentic, and B, be prepared to be a little bit controversial, not controversial in an obnoxious way, controversial in that this is my belief and I will stand on a hill and die if I have to. Like, that's what I think is very important. And I'll never forget the first time I decided that I was ready for that. And I was so not ready for that, but I put something out there and I had to just had to go with it. And it was a real turning point. But there's been times where I've had to step away and apologize or take posts or remove. I never remove it, but I might archive it or just remove comments or not remove, block comments. I never remove anything, to be clear. I never delete people's comments because that's them, not me. So, yeah, it's definitely been an evolution, but I think two things. I think I probably do care less about what people actually think of me, and I also know that I've been here long enough that the vast majority, I can't think of a time that not, but I'm not going to say 100% of the time, but the vast majority of things I share are either up and coming ideas that come to reality or something that already has been proven as fact or that I've seen. So, you know, I've sat with, we estimate around 30,000 patient encounters. I've seen a lot of things. You can't deny a theme that you see across women and then say it's not true, you know. For example, let's say women's menstrual cycles syncing up. It's like, oh, well, that's been disproven. It's like, sit with a room full of women in a workplace and tell me their cycles aren't all, like, they're telling you that. So just things like that, you know what I mean? I'm never, but I'm very, very careful in the way that I do that. And if you notice, I ask a lot of questions because I want people to think for themselves. And I really feel like we're losing the ability to think for ourselves. And that breaks my heart.
That's a really interesting way of putting that, that you ask the question and then the community provides answers.
Yeah, because it's also me not preaching something. I don't think anyone really loves being told what to do. But if you can ask prompting questions and present information in a way that's educational, people don't feel like they're being told off or doing the wrong thing. They're more likely to be curious because they're not. I'm not sitting here going, you, like, think about it. People are scared to go to the doctor because they are scared, A, something's wrong and they're going to be told something. You must do this. What if we didn't approach our health and our bodies like that and we were curious and leaned into various ideas, which to your point is actually what I'm doing when I'm fasting for the first time. I'm just leaning into something I'm curious to see what my body would do. So I like to do that with the audience. How can I spark curiosity, ask questions that I know the answer to, but I want them to think about it and then we I create a lot of open discussion and banter. It's not my Instagram. It's Instagram. So you know what I mean? It's like it's a community where like-minded people can feel like they can ask questions and they can. You should see my inbox. It's a time in there. I really wish that I mean, it's totally like not ethical. I never would. But I would like some of the questions are just unbelievable. And the
like so personal or
so personal. So yeah. People, you know, at their clearly at their wit's end, they will ask me, I feel so sad that we're at a point where someone would be willing to ask an almost stranger on the internet, give them their life story and hope that they know what the next answer might be for them.
I think that's been the case for many, for like if you think of agony aunt type Colin, like you're sort of fulfilling that.
Yeah, right.
Same role,
so it's just,
I suppose,
it is. It's a very interesting, but I wouldn't ever change it. It's
God, I'm so curious about your DMs now.
They really are a time and in a good way. Don't get me wrong. Like, I mean, sometimes every now and again, my favorite thing is, you know, I just want to answer yes to everything. I joke with my friends because people are like, should I do this or this? I'm like, yes.
Make it easier. You could just have an automated yes response.
I know, right? I could.
Nat, a lot of listeners to this show are writers and they use social media in this kind of author capacity. Are there mistakes that people make when it comes to growing a following on something like Instagram?
Yeah, I mean, I think we all make mistakes. I think selling out is a mistake. So, you know, I'm very much about anything I say, I know my audience will take seriously. So I need to be very careful with what I say. And I would never, you know, I could be presented with someone might want to give me $10,000 to say something. I would never, because it's not authentic, unless it's authentic to me. And even then I might not take the money as such. But so I think, yeah, never. I think it's very important that we are very purposeful in the content that we're sharing, that it's authentic. Don't try and be somebody else. I think it's so hard to try and pretend to be someone else, yet we compare ourselves to everyone and then try and do that. Just be you, I think, at the end of the day. And especially, I mean, for an author, I think it's really important that we're ourselves because that shines through in our writing. And, yeah, look, I think it is very, very, I think it's very important to just show up as you and share little aspects. The thing is you can share as little or as much as you like so long as it's actually authentic. So I really think for me, you don't have to go and show start to finish of your entire day, but I love to do funny things. I like to share information. So it comes back to people think, oh, well, she's informative and people tell me I'm funny. I don't actually know if I am, but they tell me all the time, you're so funny. And I'm like, am I really? But it's something that I try and be, it's a little bit entertaining. Yeah, but I just think the biggest mistake is we try and be someone else, or we see what someone else is doing and we think we have to do that. You just have to be you. You have to listen to your audience and see what they like, get the feedback from them. I mean, it can be the most incredible place for feedback. We are constantly asking questions to the audience as to what they want, what they like, you know, all the time. I always say, oh, let's just take it to the gram. We'll just ask the gram. Let's ask them. It's like the best
market research or
research. That's the word I'm looking for. It is the best research that you will ever have that's so appropriate for you. Like, when was there ever else a time that you could just, you know, pop up a couple of stories and ask for feedback? I did it a couple of weeks ago. And what did I ask? I was blown away by the responses. I asked why. Oh, I know what I asked. This is so funny. I was speaking at a conference on the Gold Coast and I was speaking about community building on Instagram. And so I was like racking my brains like, oh gosh, you know, where do you start with this? And I thought, you know what, I'm just going to ask Instagram the question. I'm going to ask Instagram, A, how long have you been following? B, why do you follow? My entire presentation was literally taken care of because I screenshotted that first and foremost. So I could see that the majority of my followers had been following for at least, well, not majority. There was a lot of people that had been following for more than 4 years, which was like, oh, that's lovely. And then the reasons that they followed, I just didn't think about the lovely things that people were going to say. But I got all this feedback and I was like, wow, how useful is that to be able to continue to provide them with what they're looking for just by asking a couple of questions. So I think that that's a really great way for people to be able to use and continue to curate the community is asking for what the current people want, because you're only going to attract more of the same people, right? That's generally what happens. I don't need all of the people. I just need the right people.
It's a good way to think about it.
And I think the other thing too to that point is the wrong thing to do on Instagram. Don't compare your numbers to anyone else's. You could have, you know, I never forget hearing someone at a conference speak about a person on Instagram and they had, I think it was like 3 million followers, and they produced a t-shirt line, and they launched it on their Instagram and they sold 3 t-shirts in the first day to 3 million people. Sorry, 8 t-shirts. It was 8 t-shirts to 3 million people. And what it showed was that you might have the biggest following in the world, but if they're not engaged and they're not enrolled in what you do, it's useless. It's vanity metrics. And a lot of what you see out there is absolutely vanity metrics. They're not real followers. They're paid or they've curated it somehow in a way. What I want is engaged followers that want to be there, that are there, you know, they're watching all the time. Because if I launch something or I have a question I want to ask, I know I'm getting, you know, legitimate answers. So it doesn't matter if you have 100 followers or 100,000 followers. What matters is how engaged they are.
It's a great way to think about it. Nat, you are also the owner of Daisy Australia and most recently the co-founder of Embody, a line of hormone nourishing foodaceuticals. Daisy Australia is a fertility cycle tracking device. I'm interested in how creating and selling products is different to the other things that you've done.
Oh, yeah, it's so different. Product creation and being I started and still am a practitioner. You can't know what patients or people need until you've spent time doing that first part. So I always, you know, I joke to business owners, especially health business owners and practitioners, we never signed up to market or to sell products. We signed up to help people first and foremost. So that getting past that first hurdle is interesting. But then when you see that there are things that could help your patients or your audience that don't exist, it's so fun to create them and then sell them, especially when they work and they kind of sell themselves. So, you know, my whole thing about life is making it working smarter and not harder and having as much ease as possible. I don't like complicated treatment plans and protocols. I don't want someone to have to take 55 supplements. Like, I create the products and things that I personally want and what my audience wants. So when we had the opportunity to take Daisy Australia, that was really interesting because that was a no-brainer. I was like, well, this is going to be very, very easy for me to promote because it's women's health, and a lot of women are very lost, whether they've come off the pill and they've got no idea about their cycle, or perhaps they're trying for a baby and they can't figure out when they're ovulating, or there's just women don't trust themselves to track their cycles. And Daisy is extremely accurate at being able to tell you when you're fertile and when you're not, which means that you can figure that out for yourself. You either want a baby or you don't. So that was really easy. And that was a great test for us to start to think about, you know, wholesaling, distribution, all of that. And then Embody, well, it wasn't a new product, but we launched it as a product because it was something that I just created for my patients, probably started creating it more than 10 years ago. Again, one day decided I was going to do a cleanse, took it to the Facebook, and said, I'm going to do a cleanse. Does anyone want to join me? And I was inundated with people wanting to cleanse. I was like, huh, this is a thing, right? And so the cleanse mix, it started off as what I called the cleanse mix, and it was something that I had people make up themselves. But people were lazy and they weren't doing it. So then I was like, well, I'll make it then. So I made it. And then we were getting great success. But then there was a couple of ingredients that I wanted to add to it, and one that I was introduced to by Jess, my business partner for Embody. And so I reformulated it, and then we put that out into the world. And 6 months later, you know, we're still having issues with supply, and it's been the most wildest, most rewarding thing. But you can't have that without the clinic. And I have to constantly remind myself that it is, being in clinical practice is really, it's interesting because you, like I said, you first of all, you sign up to help people, but it's not exactly, you're not making a lot of money doing that. Time and money service, anyone will say that. I always say, as long as it's not costing me money, it's fine. But I couldn't have had any of the other things without having that first. So I have to remind myself of that. The clinic actually is the heart of everything, and everything else that I have comes off of that, because it wouldn't exist if that wasn't there in the first place. And it makes all the other things, you know, so beautiful to have created, all because of that central place.
Nat, it's easy to see your success as an entrepreneur and as a health practitioner. Do you have a favorite failure?
Oh, which one?
All of them. List them all.
Do you know what? I'm speaking at an event, and my mum and dad, I've got to actually find this because I'll laugh my head off if I can find it. My parents have been here over the last week, and I said, we were talking about this last night. I said, I'm speaking at this event. And they asked me to speak here. I'm just going to pull it up because it's really funny. They asked me to speak at this event. And my dad's like, well, what are you going to talk on? And I said, that's a really interesting question, because there's a whole lot of, you know, I mean, I know that I've had a lot of failures, and a lot of people have watched that publicly. And so here's what I said I was speaking on. This is the little blurb. Nat Kringoudis is your good dose of support, guidance, and cheerleader all rolled into one. She's here to help you up-level your business and tap into the good, the bad, and the ugly mistakes she's made in her 20 years as a health expert. I was like, I'm basically going to tell them all the things I did wrong and not to do it. I mean, look, there's been some pretty public fails, and we're all human. I'm definitely at a point where, you know, all the things that I feared, I breathed to life. And so, but I've gotten through everything I've ever feared in business happened, and I know I made that happen. So now I'm at a point where I'm like, well, thank goodness that's all out of the way, because you were literally energetically bringing that all in. You brought all the fears in now.
Like, you had a fear and you think that.
I remember one day thinking, gosh, what if there's things I don't know about that I should know about as a business owner, you know, what happens if I miss some? I'm missing things. And then lo and behold, we got investigated by Fair Work for something and they found all these discrepancies. And I was like, see, that's exactly what I was talking about. I knew that there were bits there that weren't where they should be. And, you know, the thing is, I will always admit that I've made a mistake and I will always do my absolute best to make right. Like that's the one thing I will say. And I can sleep at night because I'm like, okay, how do we immediately remedy this or make this right? So that was just one example. You know, fearing things around as a practitioner and in the public eye, that's pretty tough because you have to be very careful of what you say. You can't mislead people into you know, treatments or outcomes that they might experience under your care. Technically, because of my training, for example, I'm allowed to call myself a doctor. I just get everyone to remove doctor because it's a very misleading title. But I can't control what other people say, for example. So there was an investigation because there was doctor in front of my name everywhere. And I was like, I took that down. It's not what I put out there, but I can't stop what other people have done. So just little things like that, you know, but it can actually be damaging for a person or a business. So we've done a lot of stuff ups with stuff like that because I just didn't know. I wish I was a lawyer every day because there's just so much to understand as a business owner that you're never going to know. And, you know, I just remember even through our Fair Work scenario where we had stuffed up, like we'd fully stuffed up, but we'd also made right immediately as soon as we realized. I just remember thinking, gosh, I feel like every business would have these same, you know, parts missing, yet you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
So you've got to give yourself grace as well. So, you know, I think that a few of those things have, and also there's been times where very innocently I've said things that have been taken offensively. And again, owning up to going, I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't know. I am a white female that grew up in a, you know, a middle-class family. I don't know. So please teach me. So there's been plenty of those things. And I think the more that I can give myself grace, that, you know, that's really important. It's like you're human. We all are. Mm. It's just that you've got more eyes watching. And that doesn't change. It keeps on growing. So I've learned a lot in the process of all of that. And I would not change any of those things either. That each of them, whilst they were extremely painful and extremely stressful and, you know, at times going, we're going to lose everything, they make you who you are now. So it's like, of course it was going to happen that way and it did happen that way. And so let's just on with the next thing. So there's not one standout. There's like many, many. But I think the main lesson in all of it is you've got to own it. And it's also the responsibility is mine. You know, at the end of the day, I can't blame anyone because it's happened to me. So I need to take the full responsibility for all of those things and look at the common denominator being me. And then where can I shift things around to learn and to do better in the future?
Mm. Nat, we are very close to the end of the interview. One of the things that I like asking people about is understanding how they figure out what to do next in life. Some people use manifestation, vision boards, people set goals, they make resolutions. How do you think about the things you want or want to achieve?
It's a good question. Without sounding of myself, I don't know how I always tend to find myself really riding the front wave of things, and it's not a planned out or thought out process. It's not like I'm going to race everybody here. In fact, there's been times where I've created something and stopped because I didn't think it was working, only to look back and go, gosh, if I had kept going, that would have been actually the next genius thing ever. You know, we created a YouTube series before anyone had ever had a YouTube series, but because we were a bit like, is this really working or not? I didn't think so. Or maybe it's expensive. Let's just let it go. And then, you know, now, could you imagine? So things like that, you know, I do think that I come up with ideas and they seem to be a little bit outside of the box, but in fact, they're often being just ahead of the wave. And so I don't really, I decide I want to do something and I do it. Mm. I don't have goals as such. But I see things and, you know, I see things into life, if that makes sense. I see or decide and then I kind of give it wings and off we go. And that's not to mean that everything we do is a success either. But I do really think that, yeah, I think you've just got to back yourself. I always approach every project. So long as it pays for itself, I don't care. Mm. That's how I approach every single thing that I create and do. It's like, so long as this is not going to cost me anything, if it doesn't make me any money or it doesn't make me anything else, that's fine, so long as it doesn't cost me anything at the end of the day. So that's always my aim. But in terms of goals and achievements and what's next, it's kind of just more of what we're already doing. I feel like I've ticked a lot of boxes and I feel really content with that. And also the other thing I have to say is, you know, I've been doing what I do for 20 years, almost 20 years pretty much, and everything has been a layer upon the next layer. It's not like you just woke up and had four businesses and, you know, all of five books and all the things. It's just, as people know, it's layer upon layer, but it can look like it just all appeared, you know what they say, the 20 year overnight success.
Yes.
And it's not, it's been a layer upon layer and timing. And I do think I generally am a positive person and I like to just get stuff done. But I am, it's not so much a goal. Do you know what it is? It's a feeling. It's feeling something when I create or when I do something. So as long as I'm staying in creative flow, then I think that is very important to keep whatever the next thing is happening. So, you know, Embody just launched in September last year. We've got some pretty big, exciting plans for that. So I think that's probably the next phase is where can we take that? Where can we take that? Because it's really nice to actually have something that's a product that's yours, that you have full control over and that you can really, and also that works. That's the other thing. You know, we joke all the time about Embody, but Jess will say to me, babe, the customers do the marketing for us. Like the testimonials are out of this world where people send things in and they tell us the results that they're having. It speaks for itself. So, you know, having something that is not only easy, something that is achievable, it's a food. So you can't really like, you know, unless you're intolerant to an ingredient, which hopefully you know you are, like any food, it's very safe. So it's been a really, really amazing experience to put that out there. And I just, yeah, we've got big plans for that. So I guess that's probably on the horizon.
Mm, sounds like a very intuitive way of working, but also just of living.
Yeah, some people will probably say it's a bit unorthodox. Some actual strategy and goals might be a good idea. But you also work out who you are over a period of time and you're like, that's not how I operate. So it's not even, yes, I agree, but this is why having business partners can be a good idea as well. One of you gets to be flippant and the other one gets to be the strategic one.
That's right, the yin to your yang.
Mm-hmm.
Now, final question, do you have a favourite quote or mantra?
Oh, it's a bit cheesy, but I do. It's very cheesy. I love the quote, be the change you wish to see in the world. I think that leading by example is really, really important. And I also go with the philosophy that if you want to see something be done about a situation or you want something to be different or you're unhappy with it, you kind of got to get your hands dirty and get in there and participate. So I think I see that when I say be the change you wish to see in the world. I even think about my husband and I are my daughter's managers for basketball because I'm like, if I actually am in there and doing it, then I can be that change that when we want something to be done differently, we get to have some input. So, but also being an example, I think is again, it's a real incredible way to collectively have an impact. So I think, yeah, that's where that comes from.
Nat Kringudas, thank you for the impact that you have and for the work that you do and for sharing your wisdom with us today.
You're so welcome. Thank you again for having me. This has been a really fun chat.
You can find show notes for this episode of The Next Step at katherinecollette.com. You can get in touch via that website or via Instagram at katherinecolletteWriter.